Welcome to W15. This is the Future of Visual Studio, Visual Studio 15 talk. My name's Mark Wilson-Thomas. I'm a senior program manager on the Visual Studio platform team. So the team that I work on looks after the core infrastructure that supports all of the experiences that you'll see inside Visual Studio. My particular piece of that is the Visual Studio Editor, which we'll be spending quite a bit of time working in today. We'll be looking at that. My team delivers all of that infrastructure, so IntelliSense and colorization and navigation and a whole bunch of other features of editing live in the team that I look after. And we have a bunch of passionate folks back over the road in Building 18, just a few hundred yards from here, who are very excited to see all of the features we're going to be showing off to you today, given a public airing. So just as a little bit of a teaser for you, I wanted to let you know that we'll be talking about Visual Studio 15 today, and I'll be showing some features that have not been shown in public before, that they're pretty much fresh off the press, so watch out for that. So, Visual Studio 15, what is it that I want you know, if you walk out of this session knowing four things, what are those four things that I want you to know? Well, firstly, I want you to realize that I hope you picked up in Amanda's keynote, if you were there yesterday, Amanda Silver's keynote, that Visual Studio has a brand new installer built from the ground up to be faster, cleaner, and optimized for your work. And we'll talk a little bit about what workloads mean when we come to discuss that. So it's optimized for that, and we'll get the job done a whole lot better. Number one is that. Number two, you're gonna get the ability to work in code bases that Visual Studio has never been able to work in before, okay? So if you work with people who do things without solutions and without projects in the kinds of languages that you didn't used to deal with in Visual Studio, hopefully your life is going to get significantly easier if you work with any kind of code base that follows those rules. The third thing that you're going to get is you're going to get more productive ways to edit and to navigate and to debug your code. Okay, so we've got some examples of all of those things that we're going to show you today. And finally, that Visual Studio 15 has been driven by your feedback, and we will continue to be driven by your feedback going forward. So I want to show you some examples of how you can provide better feedback into the product if you're not already using them, and I'm sure many of you in this room already are. So this is going to be mostly a demo session. There's a little bit at the front where we talk about some principles and ideas and so forth, but mostly it's going to be a 10,000 foot rapid lap around new features in Visual Studio 15. So I hope that's what you're up for, because that's what I'm going to give you. So what is it that gets me and my team and the folks that I work with fired up about developers in general? And what are the principles of what we want to deliver for you guys? Well, you know, developers now as much as ever, and probably even more so, are really able to create the kind of momentum and the kind of activities in companies that were simply not possible before you guys came along. You're able to be the difference between success and failure in many cases for the businesses that you work for. You actually enable things that simply were dreamed about years before. So that expanding capacity is something that we get excited about enabling. All right, so we're very excited about that, that's for sure. And what we want to do is to deliver for you, to help you succeed in all of that work, a powerful platform and tools that will enable your success. So it's not just about our platform anymore, and we'll come to that in a moment. We're looking for openness, okay? So openness doesn't just mean being transparent before you at a conference like this. As Amanda was talking about in the keynote yesterday, it means working with the open source community and making sure that we contribute where appropriate and use where appropriate open source software. It also means working with platforms that you might not traditionally have associated with Visual Studio before. I hope that you noticed that there was a lot of stuff shown yesterday in that keynote that lets you know that we're working with languages that aren't traditional Microsoft associated languages, and we're working with platforms like iOS and Android. We're working with platforms on the server side, like Linux, that you wouldn't necessarily have associated with Microsoft in the past. But we want to be the tooling that's going to enable you to succeed on all of those platforms. We want to give you the success you deserve in those places. And that's what being open's about. And finally, being productive. And this is actually a personal passion of mine. I've been in the dev tools business for 10 years now, and the reason I stay in this business in many ways is because it gives me the opportunity to shave little bits off things you do a lot. Okay? I love to do that. I enjoy it because I can see that the things that I do scale out to an enormous audience, and that gives me tremendous satisfaction. I hope that we manage to give you a more productive life. So when you're moving around your code, and when you're entering stuff into the code editor, I want to make sure that you have to take as few keystrokes as you have to over that, and that you can find the thing you're looking for, and that you can get the infrastructure out of the way, stay in the zone, and get your job done. So that's about being productive. I won't labor on this slide because Amanda talked about it yesterday in great depth, but just to say that we have three members to the Visual Studio family these days, and you probably know them all, and most of you, I'm guessing, are using all three. But Visual Studio's IDE is for those who really want an immersive kind of cockpit-style development approach to life, okay? So when you want to have your debugging pieces and your editing pieces and your publishing pieces all in one stop, and working together in an integrated fashion so that you can stay immersed in that box of the IDE and get your job done there, that's when you need Visual Studio, the IDE, okay? Visual Studio Code, though, is for that more disconnected lifestyle. So if you prefer a more decoupled approach to your development tooling, if you like to have a bunch of command windows spun up to do those different tasks, and you prefer a lightweight editor to do your editing, then Visual Studio Code is your friend. And it might be that you move between those two and use both. That's just awesome. Great. You should see some good productivity that way. And then Visual Studio Team Services, which is the comprehensive suite of ALM tools that will let you do things like managing your source code control, of course, managing your bugs and work items, but then into continuous integration and continuous testing and other scenarios of that sort that really are the difference between success and failure on really large projects when you want to work with your team. But this talk is about Visual Studio 15. Not many slides to go, folks. Don't worry, I'm not going to bore you with slides for the whole day. So, Visual Studio's momentum, okay, is just incredible and outstanding. We are, without a doubt, the largest IDE on the planet by popularity. 12.7 million as of the last count. In fact, that number's slightly out of date now, so it's probably crossed the 13 million mark now. Downloads of Visual Studio 2015 since it was launched. There are 6,000 extensions in our extensions gallery, and 100 more of them get added every single month. And what that means for you, I hope, if you're using extensions, and I'm imagining many of you are, rough count, hands up if you use extensions. Yeah, that's more than half the room are extension users, and I'm betting many of you use more than one, too. What that means to you, usually, and the reason you're using those extensions is because they can make you just that bit more productive in some specific area of work. And the chances are that you'll find an extension that's for people who are doing what you want to do up on the gallery. And that's really great. And we know that you use them because 950,000 of them get downloaded every single month. That's just a colossal number, hard to imagine, really. So today, what I'm going to be showing you is mostly going to be available in Visual Studio 15 Preview 4, okay? But, as I kind of hinted at the start, the build that I'm going to be using on this laptop here is actually a little bit beyond that. It's from a development fork further down. So I can show you some sneak peeks into a few features that won't be coming along until after that preview, and I hope you're going to enjoy those too. So if you notice anything looking a bit odd about that build, that's probably why. Final intro slide. This is an eye chart. I do not expect you to read it. However, it's in your deck for later. And the reason I'm bringing up this slide is that I want to talk about a little bit, just before we get into the demos, about how Visual Studio updates itself. Now, you probably picked up, if you were in the keynote yesterday, with Amanda, that Visual Studio now updates in some respects on a sprintly cadence. Okay, that's a pretty fast cadence for updates, and that's for what we call the micro updates. And those micro updates come out to fix small, or well, not small, but serious bugs that we pick up from telemetry. So for instance, if we find that there's something occurring in the field that we hadn't caught in our test passes internally, and it's troubling enough folks, we will work hard to get an update out really quickly, and that can be sometimes within a matter of days of the thing being found and detected. But we also ship a whole lot of other stuff through updates. And you're familiar with the quarterly updates that we ship for Visual Studio, updates 1, 2, 3, and so forth when we ship a release. And those add, you know, new features and bug fixes and a whole family of other things. But what also comes along, and what a lot of these things in the boxes are here, is we have out-of-band updates as well that add features like extensions for using Cordova and the Azure SDK and things of that sort. And this is the list of all of the things that have been delivered since we shipped Visual Studio 2015, and there's quite a lot of them. The ones that you see in yellow down here, we'll actually be talking a little bit about those in the course of this demo. But I just want you to be aware that Visual Studio is now delivering value, we hope, to you on a pretty continuous basis. So let's get into Visual Studio 15. As I mentioned, one of the top things that you need to remember when you walk out of this room is that Visual Studio 15 will be delivering a new acquisition experience. Well, question really, why are we doing that? Why did we care to do that? Several things, really. Visual Studio's default installation size had become quite large because we're supporting such a large number of platforms and such a large number of different styles of development out of the box that having a default that meant you had to install several gigabytes of stuff just to get going and install a bunch of stuff that you probably weren't using was becoming a problem for many of you. And I know that installation is not the most exciting thing for most folks. They're thinking, well, gosh, yes, I'll set it going and then I'll go away and do something else for a while. But now you won't have to. The new installer sets you up for success in several important ways, and we'll be talking about those in just a moment. So I'm going to flip over now and bring up the new installer. Some things to notice here as you look at the new installer. You can see that we have this notion of a workload. Okay, why do we care to call out these workloads? Well, what is a workload? What it is essentially a package of stuff that will let you get to, and I know this is a mostly compiling audience, will get you to F5 for your chosen language. Is kind of the way I like to talk about it, or for your chosen experience. So if you are a Windows desktop developer and you use C++, you'll be able to get to F5 doing that by selecting this workload. Okay? If you are a .NET desktop developer, and let's go take a quick look at that one, you will be able to get to F5 on your WPF and Windows Forms apps by selecting this workload. And you can always see what's going down in terms of this installer. You get a clear list here, which tells you everything that's included by default, everything that's optional but on, and you can see those blue checks there, and then a collection of other things that we think sometimes you might need, sometimes you don't. Okay? And if you're not interested in those things, then we don't check them by default for you. So we make sure that you only get what you need, which means that for the desktop workload right now, it's 1.02 gigabytes, which is a lot less than 5. But if I deselect that guy, you'll see that the core installation that I have here is only 395 megabytes. That's the Visual Studio Core Editor, and we'll be taking a quick look at what that can do for you after we've done an installation. Now, I know the surprise has been spoilt for some of you because you've seen that when I hit this button, in about 3 or so minutes' time, things are going to be done. That would have been an insane demo to pull a year ago, but now we can do this, and we can do it because that base install has been stripped back to the bare minimum that's needed to deliver the core experiences that are shared across pretty much every single workload. So whatever you're doing, you're going to need an editor. You'll probably need some team stuff. You'll probably need some debugging services, and you'll see all of those things getting laid down as we go through the installer. But it's lightweight. So only a few hundred megabytes now for that core, and then depending on what workload you add, you'll add more, but only what you need. It's fast as a result, so that core thing will come down, as I promised you. I said kind of 3 minutes or so, that's about right on average for this. And that's going to make a difference too. Obviously, if you add workloads, that time is going to get longer. That's fine, but it will still be the minimum needed to get what you need to get done. And that's what optimized is all about, okay? This thing is optimized for your needs, for your workloads, for the things you're doing, not for the things that someone else might be doing. So if you're doing .NET Desktop, but you don't do ASP.NET, why should you have to pay the price? Okay, in terms of download time and installation and space taken up on your disk and menu items that appear that you don't necessarily need when you fire up the ID, and there it is done. Okay, it's also low impact and isolated, and this kind of matters actually. It matters really because when you isolate and you take away dependencies on things like the global assembly cache and the registry and stuff like that, what it means is that your installation can be relied upon to work safely side by side. Okay, and that's good news because it means you can confidently try this out. Now, we always made a side by side promise, but there was an awful lot of work that had to go into that. This engineering effort has made it possible for that workload, shouldn't reuse the word workload here, but for that work to be significantly reduced. Okay, so we can rely now on getting a nice isolated experience. So let's launch up and see what we've got. Now remember, this was the minimum editing experience, okay, the core editor. So things you can expect to see here, I'm just going to skip over signing in here and start her up. Things you can expect to see here is basic language support for a set of languages that come in the box. And we've delivered that, and you'll be seeing in a moment, through a thing called TextMate Grammars. Anyone ever heard of TextMate? No. If you're a Mac user, you've probably heard of it. It's actually a fairly popular, simple editor, but it's actually been the source of a standard for describing grammars for different languages, and we've leveraged that because there's an awful lot of community support for it, so part of that open value that we talked about. We don't reinvent this kind of stuff now, so we've taken that open approach and adopted something that many simple text editors have done, which is supporting those grammar files that TextMate supports. And we ship with a bunch of them in the box. There are actually about 20 that come here. So we're going to take a look now open up. Before we skip on here, I want you to take a look at the new start page. Okay? You'll notice that it's changed a little bit from where things were in Visual Studio 2015. And there's some good reasons for that. So what we've done here is prioritized getting you into your code. What do I mean by that? In the past, what we found was that the start page had plenty of people using it, but the thing that was taking up most of the screen real estate on that page was a bunch of educational content, which is great. Nothing wrong with educational content, but it wasn't the main reason people were using the page. The main thing people were doing was using the most recently used list, which you'll see gets populated in a moment, to open their existing projects, or maybe they were, opening up projects and solutions that they have on disk using links there. And what we wanted to do was provide the maximum number of ways for you to get into your code. And you can see that we've got the MRU list. I'm just actually going to go ahead and use another new feature here. I'm about to open a folder of code. Okay, this is a new feature. This is the foundational piece of the story that we now have for working with code bases that do not have a solution or a project. And that might be because you're working with somebody on your team who uses Ruby or Python or Go or some other language that doesn't typically need projects in order to do its work, okay? And it doesn't need to have all that infrastructure, so we don't really want to force people to have it. So I'm going to go ahead and open a folder of code here. And I just want to pop quickly back to that start page to show you that folders of code are now represented here on the start page as well, just like the solutions were before. So you'll be able to differentiate them. They'll have this folder icon and they're pinned. Another thing you can do from that start page is you can go ahead and directly create applications. Now, of course, this is a minimal installation at the moment, so there aren't many interesting types on here, but I'll come back to this a little bit later. One of the things that we found was that one of the other patterns we saw in people's development activity is they typically create a lot of what you might call donor projects. Okay, so lots of people, for instance, if you're working in ASP.NET, you probably create a lot of empty ASP.NET projects to experiment with different ideas before you port them into your main solution. I see a few people nodding around the audience here, and this is actually a very common pattern. So we saw that happening, and we saw lots of people creating many of the same kind of project. And we thought, well, why not make that easier? Let's raise up recent templates. So whenever you create something, a new icon will appear right here that will show you that kind of project. So when we flip over to a more used version later, you'll see some more of that. We'll also enable you to get to projects that you've been working on through source code control. So if you've got a branch that you're working on and there's a solution you're working on in there, you'll be able to open it from source code control on this page as well. So this is going to become your hub for getting into your code fast as possible. That's the goal. So we have our folder of code opened here. Remember, we're in our minimal editing experience here. You'll notice that there's a couple of different kinds of languages here. There's some Go files and there's some Ruby files. And when I open up this Go file here, you'll see that I'm getting simple colorization. Okay, that's working pretty well. There's also a Ruby file here that I'll crack open for the hyphenate here. And you'll see the simple colorization is applying also to that Ruby file. Other things that apply, though, quite interesting, really. As I say, we have support for probably the top 20 languages that are on GitHub today in the box. There's going to be a list of them in the release notes, so I won't enumerate them all here. But when you get Preview 4, go ahead and check out the release notes. There's a nice list there that tells you what the languages are and what level of support you can expect for them. The other thing that's supported here, anybody use Navigate 2? Control comma? Yeah, smattering of folks, right? Navigate 2 gives you a symbolic search system for Visual Studio, and it's actually been in the product for quite some time, since 2013, or it may have been 2012. And what I'm going to do here is do a symbolic search of my code. And you can see here that it's symbolically searching using those text mate grammars to define what is a symbol and what is not a symbol. I'm able to symbolically move through my code here. So I'm looking for actually functions or methods in this case that or method equivalents that match that string hyphenate. Okay, so I can quickly and easily get to those cases, and that's incredibly useful when you're finding your way around a new code base. So you get your navigation. What else comes here? Well, interestingly, if I go to my hyphenate function here, and let's suppose that I want to start some work here in this hyphenate function and change it a little bit. What you'll see here is that for some of the languages that come from TextMate, you also get rudimentary snippet support. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily cover every single use case, but there are a number of useful ones for each language that are present there. So, for instance, if I wanted to go iterating across my variables, and I can see also that there's a collection of adjectives here. So I'm getting basic IntelliSense here as well. Now, don't be fooled, this is not a language service. Okay, what it's providing you with is simple document-based IntelliSense, but it's more than enough for many common scenarios when you're making small tweaks and edits. So I can actually iterate across my adjectives collection here using this snippet, and that's in Go, a language that traditionally wasn't necessarily something you'd have associated with Visual Studio. So long story short, our simple editor lets us have these basic editing experiences for a broad range, a little over 20 at the moment, of languages. But we can go further than that. And now we're going to. So you'll recall that back in our workloads list, if you looked carefully, there was actually a Python workload. Okay? And what I've done in this test box that I've spun up here, that I've just switched to, is it's just exactly the same install that you just saw, but with one extra thing. I just added the Python workload and actually installed a Python runtime. Okay? Now, what does that give me? What it gives me is, notice here that I've got my little simple Hello World application. Okay? And it's a very, very simple little file of Python here. But what it lets me do, having those things in place, is to start doing things like this. I can go ahead and set a breakpoint. And all I need to do to make this work is if I right-click here and set the debug and launch settings, the thing that I needed to add to make this work, and I've done it ahead of time so that I don't slow the demo down here, but in the preview 4-bits that you'll be able to get hold of, you'll need to do this for yourself for now. We're going to do some stuff we hope to make this easier in future releases, but for now you have to hook up your interpreter yourself like this. And so all I've done is in this JSON file, which I got to from that right-click menu, I've added a Python interpreter value with an escaped value of the path to my Python interpreter. Okay, that's all I had to do. And that's all I had to do to allow me, if I just save there, to do this. And notice, I've hit my breakpoint, and sure enough, it took the input, and I'm in a full debugging session. Maybe you don't quite believe me, and I wouldn't blame you, that's fine. I wouldn't believe me either. Let's prove it some more. I'm going to go back to that start page again. And you'll notice here that it's a little bit more populated. I've got a couple of those folders of code that I've opened. And actually, here's an example of one of those recent templates that I was talking to you about. I'm going to open this Hykinator master. Okay. What this is a slightly more expanded version of the Haiku generator. And what we're actually going to do here is we're going to take a look at the tests that are associated and try debugging into the tests. Same thing applies. All I've done, again, is debug and launch settings, tell it where the Python interpreter is, using that Python interpreter value. Already done. And you can note that I can do the usual thing of setting a start item. Setting a startup item works just fine. Then I can go ahead and hit this button, just as usual. And now, I can actually do all the usual things that you would expect when debugging. I can step into the Hykinator function. Stepping over things works just fine. And then when I get back here, I can hover here and see the haiku that came back. This is actually a little program that actually generates random file names based on haikus. So you can see here that it's generated broken paper 5387. Just to prove it works in all the places of the debugger, we can actually say print haiku. And there it is. So this is full integration with the Visual Studio debugger. Okay, and all I had to do here was install the right workload, open a folder of code that supports that language, make sure there's a runtime there and tell it where it is, and I'm into debugging. Okay, I can now do that on Python in the preview 4 timeframe, and we expect to see more languages come along with support for that, for cases where you're working with people who don't have a solution or a project in their code. Okay, and hopefully that's going to make life easier for you when you're working with those people. I'm just going to flip back now. And talk a little bit about the developer in a loop. Okay? Now, I'm moderately old. So when I was coming up as a developer many, many moons ago, The world was about editing, compiling, and sometimes testing and printf debugging, okay? But what we're doing as time has gone forward, we've brought more activities that need to be close to you into what we call your inner loop, okay? So you're familiar with the editing part. And so our philosophy with regard to editing is that we want to make sure that as far as possible, and I was talking to some folks down the front here about exactly this topic just before we got started, as far as possible, you don't have to take your hands off the keyboard, right? For a lot of people, we know that's a really high priority when you're editing code, and you'll see some examples of that as we go through the Dev 15 or the Visual Studio 15 feature set that we'll be looking at today. So we really also want to make sure that you can do bigger tasks like navigating around without having to lift your hands off the keyboard either. So if you want to move around that code base, get where you need to go, you should be able to do that without having to keep on flipping to the mouse. Just keeping you in the zone. That's the idea. We don't want to distract you by forcing you to mouse over to a tool, unless you like mousing. And I mean, I'm not against mouse users. Don't hear prejudice here. This is just just making sure that those who like the keyboard get to keep the keyboard working well for them. Okay. So secondly, when we think about compilation, well, you know, there's really only one thing that matters in compilation, isn't there? It's speed. Well, accuracy is important too, but speed. Speed and some more speed. That's very key, very important. And so what you'll see is that we've put a great deal of effort into optimizing compiler performance, both for all of our language environments. And so for C#, you'll see investments there in background compilation and in giving you information sooner, that kind of thing, so that compilation is done that way. On the C++ world, you'll find that the linker has become a factor of 2 to 3 times more effective. More rapid in the Visual Studio 15 timeframe, and in some cases that linker improvement, we had some data from a Kinect game that we were working with that showed that they saw an improvement of actually a factor of 10 for their case. They went from about 10 minutes down to a little under 1, and so that's been big improvements there. So compilation speed is something that's really important to us. In other languages, JavaScript and TypeScript, you really want to be working in that interactive window. So that's your equivalent of compilation, in a way, when you're working in languages that are interpreted. And what you really want to do there is to bring the results of your run back into your code a lot of the time. So you're working in an interactive window. We make that piece of the cycle better for you. Testing's been brought into the cycle for quite some time, and so has diagnosing your code. But what we're now saying is there's a new kid in town. And it's not new to you. Everyone who works on large solutions commits their code somewhere into a source code control system. But traditionally, that's actually been kind of on the side of your experience. And what we've really wanted to do in recent releases is to make that experience a little bit more tightly integrated into the, we talked about that cockpit, the kind of heads up display for your developer. We want to make sure that your commit status is something that's pretty much in your face, something that you can actually find at any time. And I'm going to go ahead and show you what that means. Okay. So here I have a fairly simple WPF app that I've been working on. And what I want you to want to draw your attention to now is down in the bottom right-hand corner here. And for some reason, my Zoom is not working. There we go. Okay. So you'll notice that we have this new publish icon down there in the status bar. And what that's about is, you're used to the status bar providing you with status around things like compilation and which line you're in if you've ever looked for it there. But it's much more useful when you're thinking about your status with respect to source code control to have things like the publish status there. And what we're going to do here is, this is an extension point. We're going to actually go ahead and publish this to Git. And you'll see what happens as a result of that. Now, don't be overly focused on the fact that it's Git, except to note that actually Git is the most commonly used repository for source code that's used from Visual Studio today. What we actually observe is that lots of people are using multiple systems, but Git actually significantly outpaces in terms of use from within Visual Studio TFVC as a source code control repository. People are also, in many cases, using multiple systems. So they'll be using Bitbucket and GitHub and other bits and pieces that on the side, as well as their main system. So we want to support multiple, and all that to say that this extension point is something we're working on with other kinds of source code control providers. I can't mention any names at the moment, but source code control providers are going to plug into this and provide experiences like the one you're seeing here. So what's happened here is, I'm actually going to go ahead and publish this to, I have a personal Visual Studio Team Services account, which is just associated with my account here. I'm going to go ahead and publish a Git repo here. While we're waiting for that, the service will spin us up. Don't let me down, service. Here we go. And we're ready to publish the repository. I'm going to call it Paint VS Live. And it's gone ahead and published that. And now that we've published, we notice down in the bottom here again that it's telling us which branch we're in. And not more than that, we can actually go ahead and create new branches from here as well, which I'm actually going to go ahead and do. I'm going to create myself a feature branch off of master because I'm going to do some work. Very easy to do. Didn't have to know that I could do it by going through Team Explorer. I could just find it out right from this convenient little gadget in the corner here. And notice that it's now telling me that I'm in the feature branch. So I always have that ambient awareness of which branch I'm working on. I can see that on the feature branch, currently, I don't have any pending changes, and I don't have any unpublished commits. Let's change that. Let's go do some work. Add some comments. It's an easy way to add a chunk of code. And now I notice that something's changed down here. I won't zoom in again because I don't want to make you seasick by zooming too many times, but hopefully you've noticed that there's a little one next to the pencil icon down the bottom there. And if I hit that guy, it's going to get me ready to do a commit. And I can decide which pieces of my change set I'm going to stage and commit the staged items. Then decide to sync them with the server. There's a little bug there. So I was able, without really having to work in Team Explorer at all, except when I was doing the actions, to stay aware of what was committed, what was not, what I was working on, what branch I was working on, entirely ambiently. So that's what we mean by bringing commit into the inner loop. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to get into a broader set of Visual Studio 15 features. Okay. The first one I want to show you here, we hear a lot from folks who work on multiple machines, and particularly in these days of spinning up virtual machines to do development work on, because they're a great way of getting a clean environment that's configured in exactly the right way, we hear that people spin up those machines and then find it isn't quite configured in exactly the right way. They log in and they go to use some feature. And remember I mentioned all those extensions that people download earlier? Yeah, they find that the extension that they were using is not there. okay? And suddenly some feature they were relying on is missing. And the old way of playing the game was, you would go back and you would find the machine that you were working on before, where the feature was working, and you'd go to Extensions and Updates Manager, and you'd rifle around in the list and you'd see, okay, well, maybe I can find the right extension that I was using, or maybe you'd go to the gallery and start rooting around there, if you could remember. No more. What we have in our Visual Studio 15 product, if we go to Extensions and Updates here, is the excellent new Roaming Extensions Manager. Okay? What the Roaming Extensions Manager is exactly what you'd imagine it is. So if I go, notice I have a number of views here, okay? The one that I'm using here is the not installed view. What this is gonna do is give me a view of extensions that I had installed on my other boxes, okay, that I don't have installed here. So I can easily pick which ones I want to install. Now I'm in complete control of this. I can actually decide that, you know, I don't want to see that one in my roaming list, and I can hit the stop roaming if I want to. But let's assume that I want to install it, and let's say the thing I'm missing is the Markdown editor here. You'll see that I can immediately go ahead and hit download, and I could install that extension right now. I'm not going to take the time and bore you with that, but you can see the principle. So the principle is I'm in control of a full kind of bookmarked list of extensions that are installed on any machine that I happen to own, and I can control the contents of that list any way I like. Next piece of bonus good news, okay? This feature is also available to you in Visual Studio 2015 as an extension imaginatively titled the Roaming Extension Manager extension, okay? So that is, that's available to you. Now, of course, that's one extra step. You have to remember to install the thing that's gonna manage the bookmarks, but hopefully that's gonna save you some time even now in Visual Studio 2015. And in Visual Studio 15, you won't have to remember to install it. It's just gonna be there right out of the box. So that's feature number one. Next one up. I'm going to flip briefly back here. This is actually Visual Studio 15. Same things are available in 2015 too, but this feature has also been available for a while there. This is some C++ code that I'm working in. Now, the C++ team has developed a number of experimental features. Okay, and you'll see this as a pattern that's coming from a number of language teams now, that they want to push out some experimental features that we have off by default, but that we let you try in your own time, in the privacy of whenever that works for you. Those things are things you can turn on and off very easily with tools options. Now, I'm just going to use a little feature that I don't know how many of you have ever used the quick launch. Okay, did you know it was there? Did you know what it does? Well, I'll show you. What it lets me do is find my way to pretty much any feature, or actually file, within Visual Studio. So I can go up here to this top corner, or I can say Control Q, and I use this just for a usage pattern example, in much the same way as many people use the Windows key and then starting typing the name of a program to start something. Okay, so Control Q, I'm gonna say, okay, I want C++ experimental features. Okay, and sure enough, I'm right to the correct spot in tools options. No more rifling around, no more messing around. I'm straight to the action, okay? Quick launch has actually been in the product for quite some time, and it's a really, really useful feature. I mention it in passing. You'll see me use it a fair bit as we go through these demos. So, you'll see here that the C++ guys have produced this set of experimental features. Now, you'll see that I've got them all turned on. By default, those are all turned off. And the one that we're going to use is the extract function method. So, simple C++ file. All I need to do, highlight a couple of lines. And just to show you how you discover it, because this is how most people do, you can use the right-click menu to see that Quick Actions and Refactorings is available. But I'm hoping that you never have to use that again, because remember, we want you to keep your hands on the keyboard. So what you really want to do is Control Dot, okay, and up comes the light bulb, okay? Control Period, Control Dot, brings up the light bulb, lets you see the set of fixes or refactorings that are available at that point. Now, we don't advertise when there's only refactorings available, because obviously you can refactor nearly any block of code. In C#, or VB, you'll have been used to seeing some light bulbs appearing automatically in that margin. And those ones appear only when we know that there's an issue that we have a fix for. Okay, these ones, we're using them on demand. Okay, so this is the home for quick fixes and refactorings. And the one we're going to use here is the one we've turned on, which is extract function. Here it is. And we're going to say do end stuff, because I was always bad at naming functions. And now, the C++ programmers amongst you will have spotted that that wasn't actually a simple operation, because it added a function here, but it also had to go ahead and touch the header file as well. And it's done both. It's taken care of business there. Another one that's enabled in that experimental set, I can actually, on this function here, I can actually say change signature. And you can see that will offer me, let's say that I decided that actually, you know, heights should really come before widths in that method signature. I can swap those around. And if I wanted to, I could commit that too. So some experimental features in the C++ set. There are a number of others of those that are online. And in fact, I'll just give you a quick glimpse. When you were in that experimental box, you'll see there's a link here. And where that link takes you is off to, let me quickly bring this up, this page, which will give you a full list of all of those experimental features. There's also an extension on the gallery, and when you get the slide deck, there's a recap of these, and in there I put a link so that you can go ahead and use it if you're a C++ guy. There are a bunch of other experimental fixes that the C++ team has come up with, and refactorings that will take things forward. And the team will definitely appreciate you trying those things out and giving them feedback so that they can move from being experimental to being real. In the product. C++ fixes. I'm going to move now to another language. Okay, so anybody do any JavaScript work out here? If you're at ASP.NET and maybe do a little bit of client-side JavaScript? Yeah, quite a few folks, right? So you'll be aware that the JavaScript IntelliSense engine has had various challenges when it comes to particularly working with libraries. And the reason why is very straightforward, although technically interesting. It requires you to, the old system required us to spin up essentially an instance of the library objects that you're working on, and then interrogate it to populate the IntelliSense, okay? And that has some reliability problems, and what it means is that you can sometimes see changes in what that list is going to display, depending sometimes on conditions and performance of machines and other factors. That's not a happy experience. You need your IntelliSense to be reliable, and you need it to be always there for you in a consistent fashion. So what the JavaScript and TypeScript team have been working on is a brand new language service, which is codenamed Solzer. And you can look this up online, go and use your favorite search engine to look up the Solzer language service, and it will give you more details of what I'm talking about here. But I just want to show you one example of why that's going to be great. So I'm going to go ahead. And what I have here is an ASP.NET project, but just imagine that I'm an ASP.NET developer and I'm adding a piece of client-side JavaScript here. So I'm going to go ahead and add a script. And it's going to be a JavaScript file. Okay. And I'm just going to start off by trying to do a little bit of jQuery action. Now, of course, I don't have my jQuery references in yet, okay? And so what I really need to do is go ahead and add them. For convenience here, and I know this is not the way that many JavaScript developers would necessarily do the work, but because I'm in an ASP.NET project here, it's actually very convenient for me to manage my project this way, and I'm gonna use NuGet to go get the jQuery library. We know that using NPM would probably be more normal for your working JS dev, but you can see now that I've pulled in all the necessary jQuery goodness, okay? But something else happened while I was doing that. What happened is that we went ahead and downloaded a .d.ts file, a definition TypeScript file, and what that's allowed us to do is this. What we've got now is a really consistent, nice, strongly typed list that comes actually from a public repository called Definitely Typed, which is a repository that, following on from the points that Amanda was making about how we're working with the open source community, this is one that we are both contributing to and using in our work. And so now I get that nice, reliable list for my jQuery IntelliSense that I wouldn't have gotten from the old engine. There are lots more benefits to the Sulzer engine, and if you're interested in the JavaScript world, I heartily recommend that you go ahead and look up Sulzer online. It's a nice, easy word, and you can type it in. So Sulzer and JavaScript should bring you right to where you want to be. But this is just one of those advantages. And what it means is that for the really large number of public libraries that are actually properly documented on Definitely Typed, you will see this class of really well-structured and precise IntelliSense. Now I know that a lot of you are C-sharp guys, okay? So I think it's probably time that I show you a C-sharp demo. Can that be good? Cool. So what I'm going to do is, back in that same application that I was in, this is just a simple WPF app, I'm going to show you a little feature, but first I want to set some scene for you. Have you ever found yourself working in a new API, okay, and you're trying to use IntelliSense to grok your way around it, and it's a big one. Let's say it's the base class of Canvas or Window or something like that. And I see nodding heads. You all know what I'm talking about, because what you're used to seeing is a long list. Now, what you're gonna see now is a feature that we're bringing in to make that list significantly shorter while you're learning, okay? And we hope it's gonna be helpful for you. Let's start. So you can see what's going on. I'll zoom in a little. First thing to notice, and you're going to notice a lot of things in this, but the first thing to notice here is that we've got highlighting, okay, match highlighting that shows you exactly what's going on in that IntelliSense window. Now, this is really important. Firstly, it gives you that confidence that you're getting the match you want. You kind of typed the right thing. It's sort of a feedback loop thing. Secondly, it opens up some scenarios that we haven't yet opened up, but for matches, like, so for instance, here you see that for now I've typed capital case P can, okay? There's no reason now why we shouldn't start matching lowercase p can, because now it's very obvious why you're getting the match, and starting to do those kinds of scenarios is now opened up for a variety of languages. We start to see some things around matching that will be possible that were not possible before. But even with things as they stand, I think you'll agree it's easier to see what's getting matched. Now, that's easy. I'm going to go ahead and select Paint Canvas. I'm going to do dcan and do the same thing. But the next step, I know that what I'm after is going to be an event, okay? So here's where I hit the hellhole that I was talking about earlier, okay? See the size of that scroll bar? Seriously? You expect me to scroll through this list? Really? You expect me to go through that and find my way around? I don't think so. What we see people doing and what we've heard people do is that they break out and they go somewhere else. They go and look at the class view, or they maybe even read documentation. Yeah, that's not right. Okay. We told you we want to keep you in the code. And so keeping you in the code is really important here. And what we're going to do to make that possible, as you probably guessed, is use these filters. Okay. You'll see that there's filters that correspond to every kind of thing in the list. And they all have keyboard shortcuts that we hope are easy to use. So we tried for initial letters wherever we could, for the kind of thing. It turns out there are some clashes there that you can't always get around. So in this case, for events, it's Alt V. So there we are. Now we're in business. We're getting down to a much shorter list. But now, as soon as I start saying, well, it's an event and it's something to do with mouse, now we're cooking, okay? Now we've got something that's gonna take us pretty much straight to the business. And we found our method much quicker that way. We can browse through, and I just wanna replay that a bit for you. Alt V, just start saying it's something to do with mouse. And notice how I'm seeing my quick info there on the left here, telling me exactly what that thing is. So I'm getting the documentation that I need, just as IntelliSense always intended me to, but now it's not in a list of hundreds of items, it's in a list of a much smaller number of items, and I can get what I want. Now we expect you're going to use this when you're learning. You're probably not going to use it every single time, because once you know the names of the things you're going to get to, you probably don't need it. But the nice thing is, it kind of stays out of your way as well. So you'll notice I don't have to read that bar of icons at all. I can scan down the list, okay, without ever noticing that I have these icons here. They're only there when you need them. You don't have to actually bother to parse them until you've got to the bottom of the list already. So here I'm going to use them again just because, you know. And again, I'm getting the kind of filter down effect that I'm looking for. So this makes life considerably easier when I'm using IntelliSense to grok a new API. That's the goal here. And you'll find that feature in preview 4. Now, I did promise you that we were going to have some sneak peeks. This is where the sneak peeks start, okay? What we're going to do now is start finding our way around, okay? I asked earlier how many people were using Navigate 2, and there was a smattering of hands. We saw a smattering of hands there. That's pretty much what I expected, because we've been talking to a lot of people about how they navigate around their code bases. You know, that's very much the way we work these days. We're spending a lot more time with the advent of modern technologies like Skype. We can talk to developers all over the world. And I was talking to someone in the audience earlier about how I'd spent some time talking about this very topic with a guy in a coffee shop in Brazil. So we talk and we connect to customers all the time to gather requirements and to figure out what it is that you do so we can make your lives easier. And this is one of those things that we want to make easier. So Navigate 2 has got a makeover, and it's got a new name, okay? It's called GoTo now. Now, why is that, okay? Why did we call it GoTo? Just indulge me for a moment here. I'll tell you a little story. It turns out that when you talk to a bunch of people, they didn't quite know what Navigate 2 even did. when you ask them, they would say, no idea what that method might do. But when you say, what it does is lets you go to different kinds of things, they say, oh, that would be it then. And that's why we've rebranded this thing. We've called it GoTo, and we've brought a new member into the family. You'll notice that lots of things are under GoTo now. So there's GoTo Line, which used to be, it has been in Visual Studio since, well, forever, really. But any of those things that you can go to, you can go to files, you can go to types, you can go to symbols, or if you want to use the straight up unfiltered method, you can go to all. And let's see what that looks like in practice. Let's start out with a simple one. Control-G. Control-G doesn't put you in a dialog box anymore, okay? What it does is it puts you into the new GoTo window. And the new GoTo window has a couple of really interesting advantages over the old dialog. Let me show you one of them. Let's suppose I was going to 110. Now, this is the old muscle memory, right? So let's just escape here. Control-G, 110, enter. Still works, just the same as it ever did. Took me straight to line 110, just like it always has, just like it should. But let's suppose, actually, that, you know, I'm going to go back to line 1 there. What I really wanted, when I got to 110, notice what happens here. You'll see that the selection, the pre-selection caret here, has moved us down to line 110, so there's a frame around that window. And I haven't dismissed the dialog yet. This is important, right? This is giving us a preview into what we are going to go and do. And one of the things we heard from folks is that when you're navigating me, give me a little bit of a hint as to what's going on. So we thought about a few designs there, and we thought, well, maybe we could put it in line. But then we thought, well, why not give them a fuller view of where they're going? And you'll notice that you'll see this coming up in another a few places too. Right here, because we've got the file open, it does it in the open file. But you'll see a few other cases that we'll look at in a moment. So let's suppose that I decided while I was in that maneuver, actually, that wasn't where I wanted to go. I actually wanted to go somewhere different. I can do that now without ever dismissing the dialog. Saves a few keystrokes, right? Lets me get to where I'm going without having to take my hands off the keyboard. You notice I didn't have to use the mouse at all there. Okay, so that's kind of a trivial case, moving around for just for line numbers. Let's use one of the others. let's say that we want to go to File, and you'll notice we've got keyboard shortcuts here. We're trying to build a family of keyboard shortcuts. Now, VS has a lot of shortcuts, and we want you to kind of start to be able to remember them very, very easily. So we want to create base shortcuts that you can extend off of. So here we're going to use a chord, which actually also lets us keep out of the way of other competing shortcuts at the same time. And so I'm going to say, actually, this is Control 1, Control F. Okay, so let's do it from right within the document here. Control 1, Control F. Hands are off the keyboard. And let's suppose I want to go to the pencil paint file. Okay, sure enough, there it is. And you notice I'm only seeing files now. Okay, the old Navigate 2 used to show you everything at once, and regardless of what you were looking for. And sometimes that's what you want. Sometimes that's extremely useful. But if you know you're going to a file, then wouldn't it be great to just do what I've just done? And so sure enough, I can go and get it. And you notice what's happened here. See that the pencil paint file has appeared in this provisional tab. Okay, so let's do a little more interesting example. If I've got multiple files that I could be going to, see what happens as I move through. Watch what's happening in that top right tab. I'm actually moving from file to file as I move down. Now this previewing behavior, we think everyone's going to like it, but there's a switch if you don't. If you don't like it, we'll let you go back to the old behavior, which was the default, which means if you hit enter, then we'll promote it to a full document. And that's actually what happens now. So if I go to paint object, you see that promoted that paint object file over to the left and made it a full file. But what it allows you to do is very quickly get to what you're looking for with a full preview as you're going there. And that's true of everything that comes through this Navigate 2 box. Oh, and by the way, the settings are all now exposed through this wheel. I'm not going to show you what's behind that because this is a work in progress. So there's dragons back there. But what I want to tell you is that that's where you're going to go to get your settings, right? So it's very easy to configure this thing. And you see, you'll notice there's a bunch of buttons for each of these kinds of things. So if I change my mind whilst I'm in here, let's suppose I started out with the old control comma behavior, which is no filters on, okay? And let's say that I start searching and what I'm going to do is IPOCL. Actually, I'll do paint object. Okay, but actually I know that what I'm really looking for is a symbol, okay? I can actually change my mind right there. Now, there's a little UI bug there. It jumped out of my way. We know it's going to get fixed. But just to show you that you can use these to switch, and they've all got keyboard shortcuts too that follow the same family rules as you'd had. They're not actually in at the moment, but they'll follow the same family rules for the keyboard shortcut pattern as we have up in that edit menu. So we've taken care to make sure that we're optimized for that. So I can move around very easily to files, to objects, to symbols, you name it. I can configure to see things like external documents. I can decide my scope is the current document right here, without having to take my hands off the mouse, off the keyboard and use the mouse, probably after the second time when I've gone and discovered it by hovering. Okay, so I'll always be able to hover to discover. Getting around got a lot easier. That's what the new go-to experience is all about. Ah, somebody liked it. Glad to hear it. Okay, so that's getting around. Next up on our sneak peeks list, okay, this is after preview 4. I was talking to some folks last night at the Ask the Experts event, and someone came up to me and said, you know, on my team, we have this terrible problem that we are unable to have team settings. And we got into it and asked a little bit about what he meant by team settings. And it turned out he had a problem that we've heard from a lot of people, okay? And the problem is this. Coding conventions on your project might be different from your personal settings. Long story short, what happens is this. You check out some code, different coding convention applies to it, you forget, you go ahead and write some code, you check it in, or you send it off for code review, and your dev lead comes back and screams at you for changing the entire file, and he can't see what on earth it was that you really changed, because all he's seeing is changes from tabs to spaces. Okay? Happens all the time. And editor config is an industry-wide solution to this problem. Okay, so there are many editors that support this format. So I'm just going to quickly pop over here to my browser and point you at the editorconfig.org site. Okay. Editor config is a means to express coding conventions that you check in with your code. Okay. This is good news because it means now, whenever someone checks out, let me show you what happens. Now, I'm working here in an ASPX file. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and show you once again, using the old quick launch, my web form settings say that I'm using spaces. Okay, those are my personal preferences. Okay, but you'll notice what happens when I actually go ahead and do some work. I'm just going to crack open that file again so that you see something. Down the bottom here, you'll notice user preferences for this file type are overridden by the project's coding conventions, just so you know. Okay, well, what that means is when I go ahead and add a div here and I indent it and I go white space, because I can never remember the shortcut for that thing, what I find is I've got a tab there. Okay, and that happened because, as you'll notice, there's an editor config file sitting here at the root of my solution. And that says that the indent style is tab. So that means no more dodgy check-ins, right? That means that these conventions can travel with your code base and be obeyed wherever this code travels, as long as you're opening it in an editor config compliant editor, which Visual Studio 15 is going to be. Okay, it's not going to stop there. We will actually be taking that a step further. And we'll be extending the vocabulary that you see on the editorconfig.org site so that it covers a number of other code styling issues. So, you know, name your favorite thing that you find in StyleCop today. You can expect that at some point in the future, we might be putting out custom extensions to editor config, which will allow you to govern that setting. And we're going to work with the community and make sure that when we do that, we do it in a way that allows other editors to benefit from that. The community will have a discussion about it, and we'll decide whether it becomes part of the core vocabulary or whether it's just one that we as Microsoft are interested in. So we're making sure that we do the right thing by the open source community there as well. Final sneak peek. We hear from a lot of folks that when they're working in a large file, like these files here, I'm in a Lua file here. This is a feature, just to be clear, that's enabled for all of those 20 languages I talked about earlier in the core editor, when you're working in core editor mode, okay? What I'm showing you here is the new structure visualization feature. I don't know if any of you use productivity power tools. But Productivity Power Tools has a similar feature in it. What we're doing in Visual Studio 15 is we're bringing that feature into the core product. You'll notice that there are these vertical lines displayed across my code. And what they do, their function is twofold, really. Firstly, they let me know where I am in my code from a tabbing perspective. And secondly, they let me know where I am in my code structurally. Okay. So notice if I hover here, and I'm just going to zoom in a little bit so you can see what's going on, I can tell exactly what block I'm in, even for stuff that's zoomed off the top. Okay? Now I just want to shunt things over so you can see the whole of the tip. There you go. So I can always tell at any given point in time, no matter how long the method or function I'm in, what my structural context happens to be. Good news, right? Very simple feature. At this point, you can see it's working on these Lua files, Ruby files, those kind of offside files. It also works on braced languages because we're essentially working on a very simple principle of just working indentation as the means to determine blocks for this base implementation. We're also providing for language services as an extension point the ability to define custom blocks of their own, and we'll see some interesting work, I'm sure, coming forward on that front. These things also work, by the way, with the expand collapse feature, so I can happily expand and collapse any of those structural blocks using the usual gestures, including the keyboard shortcuts. Everything working great. So that's the three sneak peeks. Sorry, no more sneak peeks. But I have got one more thing that I want to show you just to finish up. I'm going to head back to that paint project. And I'm going to fire it up. It's a very simple project, please don't laugh. But I noticed that, you know, it's actually a very simple paint program. I can draw pretty pictures with it. Sometimes it goes wrong. But let me just escape out of that a moment. That wasn't supposed to happen, you probably noticed. And it didn't happen the 17 times I rehearsed it either. But I can flip between different modes here. But I've got this one here, which actually has a bug. And this is the new feature that I want to show you. This here is the new exception helper, okay? It's pretty commonplace when you're coding to hit an exception in your code, okay? And typically you will have seen the old exception helper, which has been around for several releases now. And one of the most common things that you used to have to do in that, and we heard from lots of users that this is something they did all the time, was they had to drill in and find the inner exception. Okay, drilling in and finding the inner exception was a pain. You can now find the inner exception super easily. And you can see, actually, that here I've got some kind of problem with a type loading for the line 2 object here. And turns out that we have a good way of finding our way around types. And we noticed that, you know, pencil and eraser, they work just fine. So something odd about the types. Well, guess what? We have a way of getting to types. Go to type, and I can go and take a look and see pencil paint. Oh look, there's a type for pencil paint. That's there. I can hop back again. Notice how it's popping back. Okay, so I can still see the old code context that I was working in. Pencil paint's there. Eraser paint. Yeah, that's there. But actually I don't have one for line 2, and that's my bug. Okay, so I used the new exception handler, the new exception helper, to tell me what was going on, and I very quickly found that what I'd got was a not yet implemented problem. Okay, and I can use the navigate to feature, or the go to feature, as it's now rebranded. I must start calling it by its new name, go to. Well, let me quickly find my way to what the problem is. Hope you like it. Finally. Thank you, thank you. Finally, I mentioned that we're driven by feedback, and I hope that you're all reporting feedback through the report a problem feature. One of the things that I think Amanda showed in her keynote, so I won't labor it here, is this new experience which allows you to find out who else is finding similar problems to you. So if I've got a problem with IntelliSense hanging, I can go find all the other people who have an IntelliSense hang and just me to it. Or I can go ahead and raise a new issue. Now, when you raise an issue here, believe me, we read the lot. We don't necessarily respond to them all, because there's just too many. But when we need to, we'll touch base with you. This system does an awesome job, though, of gathering telemetry from your machine so that we don't have to badger you for more information so that we can get these bugs and issues fixed. So it will actually collect things like pieces of relevant event log and so forth so that we can actually diagnose issues, crash dumps in the case of crashes, and performance logs and so forth. So all of that lovely telemetry data and other kinds of data comes to us with every single one of these reports, and we're able to then analyze that in-house and get things done. So we get driven, and you see those micro updates coming from reports like this, and it just really helps. So it's super quick to raise an issue like this. Please do so, because it really will help us to make the product much better for you. So you've seen lots of demos, and I've left some stuff in the slide deck for you here so that you can get some more information on all of those. All of this stuff that you've seen, in many cases, is driven by user voice as well. And so, for instance, here with editor config, that was one of our top three user voice items. The structure visualizer, also a top user voice item. We want to hear from you. Please go ahead and raise your feedback. So just remember, Visual Studio 15 is going to bring you a lightweight, streamlined install experience. Coding for kinds of app that you've never really touched in Visual Studio before. No solution, no project, no problem. Productivity stuff. You've seen a huge list of goodies there. And we're always getting better through your feedback. So please go ahead, use the tools that we've that we showed you for customer feedback and get in touch with us. Or you can just send me your tweets on MarkPavWT. We also accept tweets on at Visual Studio as well. Those go right into our system as well. Hope you've enjoyed the session, and thanks very much for your attention. Any questions? for the tape, that's will it actually be called Visual Studio 15? I'm not the only one to dislike the current numbering system, and there are plenty of discussions. It's super confusing that we have 2015 and 15 around at the same time. 15 in air quotes, of course. I'm sure we're going to do something to sort that out. I'm not quite sure what it is at this point in time. I actually don't know, but I can take your question back to my team. Please do send me mail, and I'll get that answer for you. Thanks. Go ahead.
Extensions. Log extensions. Log extensions. The problem we have in our organization is compliance and controlling what developers are allowed to.
Right. So for the folks online, the question is there any way as an organization I can control what the folks on my teams get in terms of extensions? That's actually a request we've heard before, and there are definitely people thinking about that. In fact, one of them shares an office with me, so I'm going to take that right back to him and make sure that's on his list as something we think about. It's nothing that we're doing for 15, but it's certainly something we've heard before. And if other people feel the same, please make sure you let us know, because obviously, depending on how many people are seeing the issue, that's something that will help us prioritize. But yeah, thanks for the note.
Is the Visual Studio Code, this new editor, is it what we've been watching here, or is that a separate app?
That's a separate creation, in fact. So it's a separate installation, yeah. Yeah. And the editor that you see there is a WPF-based editor, which means it doesn't run at this point in time on multiple platforms. Visual Studio Code is a cross-platform editing experience, and so uses a different engine for rendering.
Would there be any way to check something in as part of our code base to say, anyone who's checking out this code really should have these workflows installed in Visual Studio?
That's a very, very interesting question. So the question again for the video is, let's suppose that I have a code base and I want to declare, here's the workloads that are required to work on this code base. That's actually a really interesting idea. We have some kinds of schemes in hand and ideas in hand for detecting what might be required to run a code base that you've just opened. So imagine you've opened it in the minimal editing environment and you want to go into editing it in the fully workloaded up, if you want to put it that way, manner. We're working on some ideas there. We would love to hear your feedback in terms of what kind of detection would work for you, but we're certainly looking into that problem. I'm not sure what will be delivered for 15, but it's definitely a problem we're interested in solving. Yeah.
Has anyone talked to the team about NuGet restore and relative paths in the hint path?
NuGet restore and relative paths in the hint path. I don't know. Not my area of expertise, but
specifically when we use projects that get used in multiple solutions, and if you restore NuGet packages or upgrade a NuGet package when you're in one solution, a relative path gets assigned in the hint path in the project file.
Right.
And that's usually the wrong
path. It's usually the wrong path, right.
Constantly you have to go in and unload the project files and switch everything to the solution dir variable.
Right, and, right. So you're having to hand hack your solution dir to make NuGet restore work. Is that what I'm hearing? Yeah.
So it's relative to the solution always instead of absolute path from the solution directory as opposed to relative
okay.
to where I was at when I did the NuGet install.
I would love to get a bug report on this. That would be wonderful. So one, can you send me mail? That would be great. Or two, even better, can you go and pop it in report a bug and let me know that you've done that by sending me a mail, and I'll make sure we fish that out of the system and hand it to the right person, because it seems like something needs doing there. And that'll be by far the best way to make sure that we have all the data we need for the repro. That'd be great. Thanks.
There is also a way with NuGet config files to specify like one package's directory way up the directory tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with doing that, though, is if you're using like the hosted build controllers in VSTS, now your NuGet packages have to live in a directory structure that probably doesn't exist on those build servers.
Cool. Well, thanks a ton for your attention, folks. If you want to have a further chat, I'll be down here for a few minutes, and hope you have a great rest of the show. Cheers.